ते भाषुदेवा नमो भगवते भाषुदेवा प्रयेणा भक्तियोगेन सत्संगेन मनो भवा मुक्ताय विद्यते सम्यक् प्रायणम् हि सुताम् अहम् प्रायेण भक्तियोगेन सत्संगेन विनो भवा नोपायो विद्यते सम्यक् यूनम् हि सुताम् अहम् प्रायेण भक्तियोगेन सत्संगेन विनो भवा नोपायो विद्यते सम्यक् प्रायेण हि सुताम् अहम् purposes. Bhakti Yogena, devotional service unto me. Satsangena, which is made possible by association with my devotees. Bhina, without. Udhava, O Udhava, na, not, upayaha, any means, vidyate, there is, samyak, that actually works, prayanam, the true path of life or actual shelter. He, because, sutam, of liberated souls. My dear Uddhava, I am personally the ultimate shelter and way of life for saintly, liberated persons. And thus, if one does not engage in my loving devotional service, which is made possible by associating with my devotees, then for all practical purposes, one possesses no effective means for escaping from material existence. Lord Krishna has described to Uddhava the characteristics of Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, both of which are considered to be spiritual processes. Now, however, Lord Krishna clearly indicates that Bhakti Yoga is the only means to totally free oneself from material existence, and that Bhakti Yoga is not possible without satsanga or association with other Vaishnavas. On the path of bhakti mishra jnana, or speculation on the absolute truth mixed with devotion, one is still affected by the three modes of material nature. The pure soul, liberated from all material qualities, has no tendency or desire to engage in philosophical speculation, severe austerities, or impersonal meditation. The pure soul simply loves Krishna and wants to serve him constantly. Jivera Shurup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. Pure devotional service to the Lord is called Kevala Bhakti, whereas devotional service mixed with speculative propensities is called Guna Bhuta Bhakti, or devotional service polluted by the material modes of nature. One who is actually intelligent does not make a show of philosophical wizardry, but rather discerns the superiority of pure love of Godhead and takes to the path of Kevala Bhakti. One who emphasizes so-called intellectual achievements is actually less intelligent, because such a person is more attracted to intelligence than to the pure soul, which is superior. It should be understood, however, that pure devotional service is not non-philosophical or anti-intellectual. The absolute truth is far more extensive than partial truth. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge of Lord Krishna has the greatest facility to engage in philosophical analysis, since a pure devotee is working with the entire range of conceptual categories. Those who do not know Lord Krishna are attracted to the impersonal Brahman or the localized Paramatma, but they are not aware of the ultimate category of understanding called Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lacking knowledge of Bhagavan or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lacking knowledge of Bhagavan, such imperfect philosophers certainly do not understand the expansion, interaction, and withdrawal of the Lord's innumerable potencies, and thus cannot fully analyze them. By faithfully accepting everything Lord Krishna speaks as the absolute truth, one comes to the mature platform of philosophy and achieves perfect knowledge. The goal of dhyana is not to love Krishna. And sometimes the jnanis, they do some bhakti to get some kripa or mercy to become one with Krishna. And it's a very interesting process, because impersonalists, especially Mayavadis, particularly Mayavadis, are considered Krishna's enemies, and they want Krishna's mercy to become his enemy. So they do bhakti for that purpose. Yes?
They do bhakti for that purpose. Of course, they get confined to Brahman. If they achieve that perfection, they can get confined to Brahman realization. And the worst punishment a criminal can have, and they actually go crazy, is solitary confinement, to be alone. I just heard some story that some criminal was confined to solitary confinement, and she was going crazy, so she harmed herself so they would take her to the hospital, so she wouldn't have to be alone. So the Mayavads get the raw end of the deal in the end. In addition to philosophical or intellectual understanding, pure devotional service also awards all other benefits in life, both material and spiritual. Therefore, one who for any purpose whatsoever accepts a process other than devotional service has unfortunately misunderstood the nature of pure devotional service toward Krishna. It is emphasized here that one must cultivate devotional service in association with other devotees. On the other hand, the Jnana Yoga process is cultivated alone, because it is difficult for even two mental speculators to be in the same place without their association degenerating into constant quarrel. So Brahman's a good place for them. I don't think they can fight in Brahman. They don't have a body. Other processes of self-realization are compared to the nipples on a goat's neck. They look just like breast nipples, but they will not give any milk whatsoever. This regards Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's quote of the following verses spoken by Sri Uddhava, Sukadeva Swami, and Narada Muni respectively. Tapotrayena vitasya ghore santapyasya manasya bhavad dhuvaniha pasyami nanyach charanam tavangi dvandva tathadrad amritha bi amita bivashad. This is from 11th canto, 19th chapter, 9th verse. My dear Lord, for one who has been cruelly burned in the blazing fire of material miseries, having fallen into the network of material existence, I do not see any other possible shelter besides your two lotus feet, which are a shower of nectar, extinguishing the fire of suffering. Samsara sindum ati dushtaram uti tyoshor. Nanya plavo bhagavata purushottamasya lila katha rasa nishevanam antarena punso bhaved vidha dhuka dhavaditasya. This is from the 12th canto, 4th chapter, text 40. Material existence is like an ocean that is extremely difficult to cross. The conditioned souls have fallen into this ocean, which is not cool, but rather burns them with the fire of misery. For one who has fallen into this sea and desires to get out, there is no other rescue boat except the constant relishing within oneself of the pastime narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one more verse. Kimba yogena sankhena nyasa shvadhyayayor api kimba shreyobhir anyascha na yatratma prado hari. What is the use of the yoga system, philosophical speculation, mere renunciation of the world or Vedic studies? In fact, what is the use of any so-called auspicious process without Lord Krishna, who is the source of our very existence? If, as stated in this verse, it is generally, prayena, impossible to escape material bondage without devotional service in the association of devotees, one can simply imagine the probabilities of liberation in Kali Yuga without the Krishna consciousness movement. The chances are certainly zero. One may concoct a type of liberation on the material platform, or one may live in a so-called spiritual society of mutual flattery. But if one actually wants to go back home, back to Godhead, and see with spiritual eyes the beautiful kingdom of God called Krishna Loka, one must take Lord Chaitanya's movement and worship Lord Krishna in the association of the Bhakta Gana with the devotees of the Lord. So, indirectly, what this verse in purport is saying is that In one sense, it doesn't matter what you know, and it doesn't matter what austerities you perform, and it doesn't matter how pious you are. And all these things are good for us as devotees, but independent of devotional service, they're really of no benefit. I was speaking to a devotee last Saturday, and he was having a problem. And his problem was that he was born in South India, and his mother, father, relatives, whoever, had convinced him from the time he was born to the time he became a devotee that South Indians are God's gift to the universe. And if you're not a South Indian, you know, we feel sorry for you. You're just not good. I told him I was Jewish, and Jewish people think that way also. Israelis have more patents per capita than any country in the world. So as Jewish people, of course, we don't think we're better. We know we're better. So the problem is not just South Indians. And I said, why do you think South Indians are better? And so he gave his whole list. All the samskars they have grown up with and been the pujas they're doing regularly as part of family tradition. So the point is that our philosophy is that devotional service is not caused by karma, it's not caused by jnana, it's not caused by samskara, it's not caused by austerity. It's not caused by any of these things. So you think, oh, I'm South Indian, I'm better because I've done all these things. Yeah, you've done all the things that in and of themselves cannot cause devotional service. And I said, you became a devotee. And why did you become a devotee? Because these hippies were converted and went to India. And if they didn't go, who knows what India would be like? So it was the people you put down that actually were the real cause of your bhakti, not all your samskaras and pujas. I mean, the whole conversation, his head was spinning because I was, you know, turning him around, you know, putting down South Indians. I mean, I like South Indians. But in this context of being superior. So, you know, we say it's good for devotees to be in Satvagun, it's good to do austerity, it's good to have knowledge, it's good to have impressions, positive impressions. But the whole point is, independent of Krishna consciousness, what's the value? We have in South India and other places in India, smarta Brahmins. The smarta Brahmins are very good at puja, probably better than most or all the devotees in ISKCON, or most of them. They're expert. And when they do puja, they consider it successful if the mantras are chanted properly and the puja is done properly, not if there's devotion. Devotion has nothing to do with it. It's a mechanical process. If they do the mechanics properly, that's success. And we don't think that way, do we? You know, just like you can do so many things successfully mechanically, but if it doesn't please Krishna, it's pretty useless. So bhakti is not going to be caused by perfectly executing ritual. And the next verse, which is the verse I thought I was going to give class on. What? Because I was supposed to give tomorrow and it's the next chapter. So anyway, but the next verse, or I can do both, since I don't creep up on tomorrow's class. Yeah. So what's nice about the next verse is it expands on this idea that if you don't get the mercy of a pure devotee, you don't get bhakti, even though you have all these other things going for you. And all these other things don't produce bhakti. But when you have bhakti, they help it. But in and of themselves, they can't produce it. It's only produced by a pure devotee. And the value of a pure devotee, as we know, what does it say, lava matra? So lava matra is like 1/12 of a second, right? It's just like, you know, Prabhupada walks by in the airport, and who's that man? And just, you know. And in your next life, you join the Hare Krishna movement because of that one love of mantra. I mean, don't underestimate the potency of a pure devotee. You know, did I tell that story the other day? I took my friend to the L.A. temple, and then I invited him back. Did I tell that story? And he didn't? No. Anyway, I brought my friend to the temple, and then this was before I was a devotee, and I said, I'm going back the next day. I called him up, and I said, let's go back. And he said, no, I don't want to go. I said, why? He said, I'm afraid I'll join. That next day was the day Prabhupada came. He would have gotten to see Prabhupada. I was just thinking of it this morning. I said, I forgot that. That was 1969. He was one of my best friends, and I had come back from college, so he came to the temple. Says, I'm afraid if I go back, I'll join. It's so amazing at the temple. It's so ecstatic. And that day, Prabhupada came, and I went to the airport to meet him. And if he was with me, he would have gone to the airport to meet him. So, Prabhupada was asked once, what have we done, or what has anybody done to get the association of a pure devotee? And we think, oh, I must have been a brahmachari in the Gaudiya Math in my last life. Been an ant that, was eating a gulab jamun that was left over on a plate or something. And Prabhupada, in this case, he said, nothing, you didn't do anything. He said, you have to become fortunate to be Krishna conscious. So devotees were confused. You don't do anything, but you have to be fortunate. So Prabhupada, how do you become fortunate? He said, well, you just take to it. You just take it, Somebody invites you to the temple, you go. Your friend invites you to the temple, and Prabhupada comes, and somehow you decide not to go that day. What more greater misfortune could there be for that person? I was in South Africa, and the devotee was driving me somewhere, and he said, Prabhupada came here. I was 20 years old, and I didn't go see him, and I could have seen him, and I knew he came, and I didn't know that much about devotees, and I'm like kicking myself. So, Shri Devotees are saying, well, why does somebody become a devotee, past life this, past life that, piety, fortune, intelligent, and Prabhupada saying, you just take it, that's your fortune. Right now you make a decision to take it. And then when you make that decision to take it, what happens? You get the mercy of a pure devotee. And we've seen some devotees in the early days, went to the temple, saw Prabhupada, started crying, surrendered on the spot. Off the street, completely involved in hippie culture, off the street, surrendered to Prabhupada, shaved up that day, the next day on the street preaching. It's amazing. And when you want to understand what it means to the mercy of a pure devotee, that's how you see it. Sometimes Prabhupada was asked, so what about your mystic power? These are my mystic powers. I can change people's consciousness. Look at these people. You want to see my mystic power? Look at them. Last week they were this, now they're that. One of the most amazing experiences I had was years ago in Mayapur. My daughter and I were walking along the wall, and they have all the shops, the shops that sell all the same thing. It's just they're put in, this shop has it on the right side and that one has it on the left side. It's basically the same thing. So one shop is selling videos. I mean, I guess it's nice, gives everyone a chance to make some money. But so they were showing video. And I stopped and I said, oh my Govinda, that's the installation of Rukmini Dwarkadish in 1970. I was there. And I knew all the devotees. And I go, that's so-and-so, that's so-and-so. And I'm watching this, not in so much in amazement because I was there, but I'm watching it because I know all the devotees and I know how long they've been devotees. And when you look at the video, you can't tell. It just looks like any initiation today in ISKCON. The nature of the kirtan, the nature of the puja, just looking at the faces of devotees, the dedication, It doesn't look like ISKCON 1970. The average devotee in that temple had been in a movement less than 1 year. And there's no indication in looking at that video. The nature of their bhakti and devotion does not indicate that a year ago they were eating meat, taking drugs, and, you know, listening to Rolling Stones. There's no indication. It just looks like any temple today. I said to my daughter, I said, does this look like these devotees have been in? A lot of them had only been 6 months. I'd only been in 8 months at that time. And they're all like average age, like 20, 21. I said to my daughter, does this look like these are brand new devotees in a brand new movement? She said, no, not at all. And I was looking at that and I was thinking, this is amazing. Because so many people became devotees, and like that, it was like they'd been devotees their whole life. Like, you know, they just took to Krishna consciousness in an instant and got completely absorbed in preaching, in deity worship, and studying. Isn't it? Those of us who are older devotees, we saw that. It's amazing. That's the mercy of a pure devotee. And it had nothing to do with their past samskaras, their past austerities, their jnana, their yoga, nothing. Yes? That's it. Right? So, now, there's some bad news. You want the bad news? Well, it's good news, but it's bad news. The bad news is if you want to make other people Krishna conscious, you have to be Krishna conscious. What's so bad about it? You actually, your words are not really what matters. It's you. You are what matters. Because, you know, we want to think by giving a good talk or doing this and that, we'll make people Krishna conscious. So that's a very small part of it. But we actually have to be Krishna conscious. There's a purport. Maybe you know that purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Prabhupada saying, you know, everything we do, we need pure devotees. He said, even if we do a play, we can't have professional actors. We have to have pure devotees because only pure devotees have Shakti. When we do kirtan, we have to have pure devotees because only pure devotees have Shakti. Like sometimes devotees say, well, you know, sometimes other people are doing kirtan and, you know, they're not pure devotees. So what do we do? And the answer is, you chant with pure devotion. And then you purify the environment. We need pure devotees. So in that, I believe it's in that purport that Prabhupada said, what the Krishna conscious movement needs is many, many pure devotees. Because if we have many pure devotees, then the Krishna conscious movement will spread. So, we should never underestimate the need for pure devotees, and we can't cheat the system and think people will become pure if we're not pure. So, I was meditating a little bit this morning on the power of a pure devotee and what the pure devotee has done for us. We all have that experience. And how, in my personal experience, in the work I do in trying to help people, I see that my own Krishna consciousness is really what's most important. My own sadhana, my own realizations, my own improving myself is what I see that I'm sharing. And, I see that's what affects them. At least that's what they tell me. And one of the feedback I get, and I'm sure we all have this experience, is that when especially younger devotees see devotees, older devotees, who are exhibiting qualities, good qualities, exhibiting the qualities of devotees, and who are happy in Krishna consciousness, it makes a very deep impression on them. It builds faith. Because if nobody can become Krishna conscious, how are we going to have any faith that the process is worth it? Think, well, like, look at you! You've been a devotee, like, for 5 centuries. And I don't want to end up like you. I'm getting out of here. I'm trying something else. But if we see, you know, that you are full of realization, you're relishing the holy name, you're blissful, you're happy, your material life, spiritual life, everything is working. And you think, yes, this is what I want, this is what I want to do. It builds faith that the process works. That's part of the power of pure devotional service. And it's my understanding that Prabhupada never felt that we could be successful any other way by any material ability. And the proof of that is that Prabhupada sent us all around the world when we were young and didn't have material ability. So what ability did we have? I was in Canada, Vancouver, in 1970, and I used to pray every night, and I told the devotees, pray every night that Krishna will send devotees. Because when I went there, there was only four of us. So Vancouver's a big city for four devotees, right? Four devotees, and trying to make a city of a million or plus people Krishna conscious. So every night I pray to Krishna, say, please send devotees. And I tell the devotees that you should also pray because we need devotees. And in that next year, like about 20 people became devotees, and we actually had two temples. It was all, I wasn't doing anything. It was just, these are amazing stories, which if I ever finish writing my book, we'll hear about. But to make a long story short, and eight people joined at once, like four families, just, you know, two men and three families just joined, and then, you know, like that. So Prabhupada heard about it, and I think the GBC told him, and I can honestly say we had no strategy whatsoever for making people devotees. All we did was go out every day and chant. I mean, you could call that a strategy, but nothing like that we consciously strategize, this is how people are thinking, and this is how we should deal with them, this is how we should dress, and these are the kind of programs we should do, and this is how we should treat them at the temple. Nothing like that. And so many people became devotees. So no strategy, no real intelligence. We were very young. And so Prabhupada heard about it. And I'm not saying this to brag, but I'm saying this to make a point. And I think that I was sincere in my desire that people would become devotees. And so the GBC said, Prabhupada in Vancouver, so many people are becoming devotees. And Prabhupada said, yes, Mahatma Das is sincere. He said, and that's why Krishna is sending devotees. So, but my point is, it wasn't that Prabhupada had faith in our material abilities. He had faith in our sincerity, and sincerity was the power, right? That's what. And that sincerity was being communicated to other people, and other people were becoming sincere. And so, in those days, my remembrance of Krishna consciousness, in those days, meeting Prabhupada's disciples was almost as good as meeting Prabhupada. Because they were, Ragatmika, you agree?
Yeah, can I make a point?
Yeah, yeah.
I know somebody who came to the temple for the first time then, and Prabhupada wasn't there.
I'll just repeat what you said to the microphones. You know someone who came to the temple the first time Prabhupada wasn't there, and?
And she stayed overnight. And the next day, she was in a sari distributing back to Godheads on Jones Beach. It was the 4th of July, Harinam Party in New York, and went back to work for a week in June the next week.
Yeah.
And got the service of typing Prabhupada's books. But that was not, wasn't, Prabhupada, yeah, so-called, yeah, wasn't personally there, yeah, but the devotees of Prabhupada,
yeah,
were very.
the transparency of the devotees in their sincerity to execute Prabhupada's desire, it was as if associating with them was like associating with Prabhupada. And so there are many stories like that. That's very, very common. And Prabhupada knew that if we did what he wanted us to do and we were sincere, that would happen. Otherwise, you couldn't send people. Chiru Prabhu, 6 months, became a temple president in Australia. It's not like, oh, he became a temple president 60 miles from Los Angeles, so if he was having trouble, he could just go up there and get some guidance. This was Australia. 6 months in the movement. He told me he didn't even know Bhagavad Gita yet. He didn't even, you know, his classes were about his life before he was a devotee. He didn't know what to say. And he was very successful because of his sincerity. So, if we're sincere, we become transparent via media for Prabhupada, and then that's the real thing that people get that makes them Krishna conscious. Yes? And you can be very austere, very knowledgeable, have a very pure South Indian background, and never become a devotee. And you can be a pukka hippie, psychedelic, drinking psychedelic drugs, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and 30 years later, you're a guru with 20,000 disciples. That's the mercy of a pure devotee. That's how we understand these verses. Yes, Ranjit.
There's one thing in this verse about the absolute truth in the purport.
Mm-hmm.
And just the other day, we were in discussion and someone mentioned how in Bhagavad Gita, we see that there's like different kinds of yoga that are mentioned and we go through them. But Srila Prabhupada's emphasis was always on bhakti yoga.
Yes.
That was the, and that even from the very, very first, whether Arjuna is losing it, and then into Sankhya, and then into Karma Yoga, and so on. Prabhupada is explaining it from the point of view of Bhakti Yoga right from the beginning.
Yes.
There's no, and sometimes he's criticized for that by the scholars and yes. The South Indians and, you know, the kind of people that are into that. But Srila Prabhupada's explaining it from that angle. Not just Shastra Chakshus, but actually Bhakti Chakshus. And so I thought that was really, I've never heard it put like that before.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Jodha Prabhu, he talks about that. Uh-huh. And he said his Bhagavad Gita was the opposite, because for the very reasons you said, that people, some people will need that gradual, step by step ladder to get to bhakti and understand the process of why these are stepping stones. But ultimately, it's not necessary, obviously. And Prabhupada wanted to get it in right away from the beginning, which is so interesting. I was so interested because when the VIT was teaching Bhagavad Gita, they weren't teaching it this way. They were teaching it more from the view of the acharyas, you know, and I was like trying to get my head around it. I think, you know, it seems like a very academic way of teaching Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada was. Yes? It's, you know, it was much different, you know. Yes, Trivikram and then Soma.
Earlier you were saying that when you have, it's your Krishna consciousness that brings people, make people Krishna conscious. But also there is another side that I was thinking about, that if you give them one of Prabhupada's book and they read that book, that by itself is sufficient to make them a devotee. That's one point.
Can I respond?
Yeah.
This is a debate, I was responding. It's half of it. It's part of it. It gets them in. But without the association... See, the first verse said, devotional service depends on association of devotees. And Chaitanya Charitamrita says the association of devotees is the root cause of devotional service. And when we talk about association of devotees, we're ultimately talking about association of pure devotees, at least those who are purely following. So, for that process to completely work, a book distribution, there has to be a sangha of pure devotees for those people. Without it, it's like it's open, the door is open, but now what do I do? So what you said is true, and at the same time Prabhupada established ISKCON to give people association of pure devotees. And if things become watered down, there's no association of pure devotees, then everything will be ruined, even though they have the book, they have to see it in some, they have to see it in real life.
That initial stage prepares them for the other stages.
Yes.
You know, like association of devotees, hearing classes,
I would also say one other thing. Depending on the purity of the book distributor, that will also affect the people's desire to go further.
It's true.
And the first devotee I met was so sincere and serious. I'd never met a person in my life that sincere. It was like, when I met him, it was like, whoa, what planet are you from? And I met him in 1967. That's about 50-odd years ago. And I can remember vividly that meeting because he was so sincere. It was Keshava, a body named Keshava. Yes. Seshav, oh. He has it. Yeah, okay.
And you're talking about meeting devotees that are sincere and how it affects the first devotee I met and got books from was Vagatma Kamata.
<We will. laughs>
She was very sincere. Then and now.
You can never forget, right? Okay, second point.
So karma. Karma propels one eventually to reach devotional service. Like, you know, I mean, it's read in, good karma is read in one.
Oh, good karma?
Is read in one to come to that step. See, it's, yeah, you know, I mean, we cannot really negate that. I mean, of course.
What do you mean by good karma?
Just that. When one comes to the human platform, that's the qualification. Anyone in the human platform can actually take to the process.
Yes.
But one who has traversed so much path, like rituals, jnana, this, that, and reached the stage for bhakti, see, it becomes easy for him. You know, it becomes easy to hit.
It can be, not necessarily. For some, it's going to be more difficult because they're more conditioned. I'll give you an example. I was, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was in Calcutta and they asked me to give class. And I don't remember what I was talking about, but lightning bolts hit me. And I was thinking, in my mind, I didn't tell them, I don't think I told them this, I think, I was thinking, you must have an extremely difficult time being devotees, because you've been severely programmed within the caste system, and you can look at another person's face and know what family he's from, and then put yourself above, below, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Especially once I know your name, then I know what caste you are, and I know where I am. And, so, the people who have the good karma you're talking about are also born in that situation, which makes it a real challenge.
Krishna also says, after many, many births and death, one eventually surrender to me.
Many births of jnana, not karma. Yes?
After many, many births. For Sparvanta says,
but we can say, yeah, after many, many births, and many more, and 1/12 of the second, you can get it. So that's there also. And the 1/12 of the second is more important than the many births. Or combination of both. Yes, Soma, and then Jamasmi, then Pushkar. Yeah.
Okay. Now this is just a kind of a funny story about making devotees. I don't know what year it was, but Hansa Duda told me this story that before going to Mayapur to meet Srila Prabhupada, they did really well in Germany. I think they made like 30 devotees had shaved up in that month. So he was, you know, really excited that he could tell Srila Prabhupada that. So when he went into Srila Prabhupada's room, he said, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, you know, we made 30 devotees last month, you know, they're all shaved up." And Srila Prabhupada said, "You don't make any devotees, Krishna sends them." And so he was feeling, you know, a little hurt, and he said, "Well, then why do we work so hard if Krishna's just sending them?" And Prabhupada said, "Well, what else would you do?"
He just reminded me of one thing that I forgot to say, which I think is significant. You know, there's so many verses about pada, rajabhishekam, bathing in the dust of the feet of pure devotee. And so once a Tray Rishi said, "Well, Prabhupada, what's this dust, you know, what's this bathing in the dust business? You know, what does that mean? You know, serving the dust, bathing in the..." Prabhupada said, "It's the instruction. The dust is the instruction." And one time a devotee said, "Srila Prabhupada, please give me your mercy so I can follow your instruction." And Prabhupada said, "My mercy is my instruction." And there's a funny story. Ramaswamy gave one of his, you know, 2 or 3 hour classes, and then, as typically is done in India, Indians come up and say, "Oh, Maharaj, give me your mercy." And he said, "What do you think I just did for the last 3 hours?" So I think, you know, we also have to understand what is the mercy and how you get it. And of course, following the instruction. Yes.
The point that Trivikar Prabhu was making about kind of going through your karma and coming up maybe from the modes, you know, when the mode of goodness is such that we would think one is more open to Krishna consciousness, yes. But the downside is that they become attached to that,
yeah.
You know, mode, yeah, of nature, and resist opportunities for devotional service.
And they might be happy and not have a strong impetus also to just, you know, be happy to stay where they are. Yes. Pushkar wants to say something. He doesn't have to say it.
Pushkar go first.
Sukadev, you want to say something?
I can make one argument that I heard over the radio. I think you were just talking about saying, well, sometimes we hear about these random people, say in Siberia, they get a book and they find out for 3 years they've been worshiping. They had no association, zero.
Yeah.
They might have gotten the book by finding it on the side of the road, or, you know, cause especially in the old days, they were scared to,
yeah,
do anything. So what do we argue? How do you argue?
The top was that Russians are not Americans. What happens in Russia? But yeah, Russians are—they're different. It's,
yeah,
true.
Just one of the,
it's true. Yes.
That one of the benefits of having the Western birth is that you never find out about Mayavad philosophy.
Yeah.
Until,
yeah,
after you join the movement.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know, when I read Prabhupada's books for the first time, I really wondered, who are these Mayavadis? I never heard of any Mayavad. Why were they so bad? You know, I surely would have seen them at some point, you know, if they were that crazy or evil or whatever. You know. So I think that's one of the benefits.
Or the demigods.
Demigods.
No, we don't want to underestimate the power of Prabhupada's books. But ultimately, they need association. But I don't know if I told this story. I was somewhere in Eastern Europe and I said, you know, if your country became prosperous and the weather changed, do you think you'd be here? And they all, nobody raised their hand. So there are advantages to the being in Siberia. Yes.
Yes, class. Here's something that's a little on the other side of the spectrum of understanding.
when Prabhupada had, when he first came to America, and then he had the stroke and he went back to India to heal. And then he wrote a letter to the devotees and he named them. There's about like seven receivers of the letter, and he named each one of them in the salutation. And he said, in your last life, you were in India. You know, Lord Chaitanya has placed you in American wombs to help me spread this movement. So that's one point.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, yes.
Yeah, so...
There's only those seven.
And there's that,
well, it's interesting because I definitely have heard Prabhupada say that many times. And I think it's obvious to many of us because we were like, you know, 15 and, you know, ready to like become sadhus or something. But I think the other statement is Prabhupada saying, you know, for those who weren't like that, if they're just open and take to it, then they also can get it. So I think it's a good point. Yeah, both things are there.
There's also the, Pran Govinda's not here, so I can't tell us which Chaitanya Charitamrita verse this is in the purport, but Prabhupada quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur as moksha sukriti. Bhagan mukhi sukriti. Bhaktian mukhi sukriti. There's bhagan mukhi sukriti. And there's, I think it's moksha sukriti. You know, there's three kinds of pious activities, three kinds of sukritis, and one of them leads to bhakti. And if we get X amount of deposits in that transcendental bank account, then we're fortunate, and then we can get the mercy.
Yeah.
So that's something that's oftentimes viewed that way, and then we get Prabhupada's, I have major mercy, you know, he'll
have major fortune.
Major good fortune, yeah.
Yeah, by sticking a pakora in your mouth. But isn't it the same thing? Because they have to do the bhakti sukriti.
Because that bhakti mukhi sukriti, it only comes from the Madhyama Vaishnava, you know, giving mercy. That's the understanding that's there.
There's also purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was said, Krishna's mercy will go wherever the devotee points, whatever direction the devotee points. So if we want to be kind to someone, Krishna will be kind to that person. So we have maybe more power than we think. Yes.
So what you were describing, what happened in Vancouver, what happened with Mamsabuddha,
in Vancouver and how Prabhupada commented, and but it seemed that was what was going on in those days. And the inference would be, are we less sincere now? Is that the problem? If we were more sincere, then things would be a lot different. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
well, you just did.
Okay, well,
I could get myself in trouble. I'll tell you something. Maybe it'll help answer the question. In 1970, there was some trouble in the movement, and after that trouble, Prabhupada stopped us from doing Harinam late at night, and we were doing it late at night, and we were going to bed on the weekends at 2 a.m., so we weren't getting up till 8, so it wasn't much of a morning program. And he stopped that, and he said, get up early. Get up early in the morning. So at that time, I'd become the temple president, and an Indian invited us to his house to go for dinner. I said, we can't go, because Prabhupada said we can't go out at night. And the Indian was frustrated. He said, what's the big deal? Just come to my house, we'll have prasadam. I said, no, we can't go out at night, because I don't have the intelligence to understand the context of the instruction. So my realization in those days is we weren't smart enough to disobey what Prabhupada said. And then we became smart enough to disobey as we grew. So I think that was one factor that was helping us. We didn't know how to be over-intelligent. We weren't smart enough to be over-intelligent yet. So we were very strictly following. And obviously Prabhupada was, you know, walking in front of the, as the general in revolution, and saying things like, in 10, 20 years, this will be finished, scientists will be finished, no one will accept this, no, yeah, so we were obviously inspired in a very special way. I can't say we're not sincere, but if I had to answer this question, if there was a gun in my head, I would basically say what I've observed is we went through a very dark period, and we kind of are getting back to where we left off when things were going better. That's what I see, and that's why they're going better, because we're back to where we were before we thought we could do it maybe some other way, or rethinking it in a new way. And whenever you see, you know, programs succeeding, you kind of realize, yeah, well, that's kind of what we were doing in 1978, wasn't it? And now we're back on track again. Yes, Sukadev. Sukadev will be last. Last one.
When I heard Janasani say that you have to have the mercy of a Madhuma Adhikara, it struck me how important it is, but also how it could be misunderstood in the sense that people thought, well, Prabhupada's not here,
yeah,
and so I have to go someplace else to,
yes,
find a,
yes,
Madhuma Adhikara. But
yeah,
actually, it comes under Srila Prabhupada's protection and direction at all times, and Prabhupada's books and instructions and all of that are all his energy that's driving this movement. So we're under that protection,
yeah,
of Madhuma Adhikara all the time.
It's, I was just listening to a discussion on this topic, and it's kind of interesting because the Ritviks are only Prabhupada. You go the other side, you have to have the presence of the living guru, pure devotee, special, rare soul. There's only a few of them. Get their association. They will tweet. And as you said, our philosophy is Prabhupada is that pure devotee. He's there. And if we can't get association with him through his books and service, why did he write them? So, if anyone says there's a pure devotee down the street, if you don't get his association, you're pretty hopeless in Krishna consciousness. Does that really make sense based on what Prabhupada taught us? Did Prabhupada say, burn all my books after I go? They're not, they won't have power. No. Thank you for that. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Hasham ki jai, Gopal Manandi.